I'm Gabe. I'm an alcoholic.
Yay.
My sobriety date is March 15th, 2025. I have a sponsor. I've worked the steps. I'm available to sponsor other men. I have a home group, and today the topic is home groups. So there's a lot of people here. I've never spoken at a meeting this big before, so bear with me. And I just got asked to speak recently, so we're both going to find out together what it is I'm going to say. No plan. So with that being said, I'm coming back through. And so my experience has been with having a home group in more smaller settings. When I came into the rooms, I didn't know what I was going to do without alcohol. What do I spend my time doing? That was my only hobby, and it controlled my life. So, and I knew I needed to be here, and so I had no problem when I came in. Like, I'm an alcoholic. Like, I wasn't someone who couldn't see the powerlessness. And so when I came in, the first meeting I went to, that became my home group. I just was like, okay. Because they just kind of swarmed me and were like, this is what you're going to do. And I was in a spot in my life where I was just ready to just agree to whatever. I was like, okay, let's do it. And it worked. I got in the middle of the boat and stuck around, even just doing something and being accountable to those people. They became like my family. For me, getting out of myself is so important in my recovery. And so just figuring out how to, spend time with other people without using drugs or alcohol is difficult. I've always felt a little weird, And so, for me, dealing with people without, without any drugs or alcohol was hard, because I wanted to control, the situation. And so, my experience was in mainly in a smaller home group, where you really develop longer relationships with people and the accountability, because people can tell, And so I could know, they expect me to be here and they're going to tell if something's off in my life. And so it kept me honest. And, it really, spending time with people in a home group is huge. And that's one of those things. I couldn't find it in the book. Doesn't say home group in the book, but that's one of those things that's been suggested to me, that in times when I've been able to put the days in a row, that I was active in a home group. And so calling new people and calling a sponsor and actively reading, praying, and meditating, things like that are those things that I haven't seen in the book, but when I feel spiritually fit, I'm doing, And so, for me, I had changed home groups too. Sometimes you're just not feeling it anymore. I kind of outgrew my first one, I found one that I thought was better. But that I could relate to the fellowship a bit more. And that's really, really I came in pretty young. I couldn't live with drinking and I couldn't live without it, and so I needed a group of people that I could relate to and, go through life with in a way that, it was worth living, and so for me, finding people that I could really relate to, and, I want to be accountable to and show up and hang out with and do things with was huge. I got sober on the other side of the bridge. And so for a period of time, my home group was the Alano Beach Club Friday night meeting. I don't even know if that clubhouse is around. It might have got blown away in the storm or something like that. But it was a great group of people. And, I got involved in the Standing Service Committee and stuck around for a while over there. And, I was able to, when I was doing this program, my life went from I was just blacking out and doing crazy stuff and, like, putting myself in danger and, like, I shouldn't even be here. And I'm not going to go through all that because if you're an alcoholic like me, you know those stories. And so it's a miracle I'm here and I get to come back through that. But, and probably the only reason I'm here today is because I got involved and put, some continuous sobriety together. My life totally changed. I achieved everything I wanted to when I came in. I got an amazing career. I had a great, I had all the things. And then I moved across the bridge away from my community of people I was accountable to. And, I got out of some situations that were holding me accountable. And, it's crazy once I, at least if you're like me, how quick you can get sick, I get sick quick. And I get away from it quick. And so I got away from it. And I picked up. And I was out for about 2 years. And it was dangerous. And it was terrible. It wasn't fun. And it's hard to realize because, like, even during that 2 years, stuff would happen that was, like, I'd wake up and I'm like, oh, my God, I got to stop drinking. Like, there's no, like, how am I still alive? How have I not hurt, physically hurt anyone? But by the next weekend, I forgot, because I'm alone. I don't have any meaningful connections with anyone because I can't keep people around because of how I act and there's no accountability. And so that was the past 2 years, and it's I'm happy that these rooms are still here, and there wasn't any locks on the doors. No one was like, hey, you can't come back, grateful for that. And so, it works if you work it, and, when I stopped working it, it went south on me. And so, yeah, it's pitiful, incomprehensible, demoralizing, this disease. And, I'm right where I belong. I'm glad you guys are here. And, my experience is that, getting involved in getting service is the best I've felt and the most, like, close to, the promises. I've had times where they've materialized in my life, it's real. Like, it's like the business I'm in, it's like, hey, it's a warranty, this is what is going to happen, and it's true. It is true. But they only materialize if you work for them. And for me, I'm the kind of guy that sometimes I forget that, you get out what you put in, and it's so easy for me to get away from it. And so I'm happy that there's fellowships that, show me that there is a life way more than I could have ever imagined. And not even more than I could have ever imagined, but, like, that jumping off point's real, where you can't live with it, you can't live without it. And it is wild when, I find myself, the promises you make to yourself and you just can't keep, that's powerlessness. When people ask you, Gabe, why'd you do this again? And I don't have an answer, why did you do this? And you read what you did, and you're like, I did that, really? So, you know, I can laugh about it, but it's so serious, you know, it's bad. And so, I should keep coming back, and I will until you guys stop me. Thanks.
Sorry, I just really, our group has asked Leslie to be our main speaker tonight. Okay, all right, podium anxiety, give me a minute. It's great when you're sitting out there, but when you get up here and you see everybody, it's like, wow. But anyway, hi family, you are my chosen family. So there is nothing for me to be afraid of. I'm only afraid when I go back to Connecticut to my real family. So hopefully God's got a message for us tonight. So my name is Leslie Gargano. I am an alcoholic. I want to thank Will for asking me to speak. I was supposed to speak in February, but I got sick with the flu at Christmas, and it was a six-week ordeal for me that I survived without a drink or a drug. So I'm glad that I was able to get a new date and be here. So my sobriety date is 1-2-90. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor. I sponsor others. I have a home group. Very great topic, Gabe. Love that. I have a great home group called Simply Sobriety, Tuesday night, 7 p.m. It's a women's meeting that meets in Brandon. Come on out. We had 45 women there on Tuesday. Just incredible. And we got our newcomer peeps here tonight from Seventh Summit that have been coming to our meeting too. Got our little posse there, so it's good to have you guys tonight. Good to have the newcomers and everybody here. So, all right, so what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. So, I was born and raised in Bridgeport, Connecticut. I don't know if we have any Connecticut peeps here, but whoop, whoop. we have one. so I was born into a working class family, the baby of three girls. So that tells you that I was a spoiled brat from day one. You know, babies, most of the babies are spoiled brats, and I'm no different. I had a good family life until I became aware that it wasn't a good family life. I lived most of my life outside in the shadow of my sister, the middle sister, Lisa, who was my hero. She was adventurous and she had no fear. And I, as a child, was totally opposite. I was afraid. I was super sensitive. I was bossy. I was spoiled. I didn't listen. So I really feel that I was born an alcoholic. I had all of the, I don't know, the raw material for that. So, life at home was not great. My parents were both drinkers and young partiers and violent. I didn't become aware of it until I was probably about 9 or 10, but I'm sure I was feeling the effects of it before that. I just wasn't physically aware that there was trouble in paradise. by the time I was born, my mother stopped parenting. She didn't want any more responsibility, so my sister Lisa pretty much raised me. Because my mom had checked out. And so I was left unsupervised, which is not good for me at all. Even today, I don't do well being unsupervised. I definitely need to stay honest and be accountable to somebody. I had my first drink at 11 on a class trip, drinking Tango in the bushes. For the 60-year-olds out there that remember what Tango was, I know it's young people's groups. I don't know if you, you know about Tango, but it was horrible. It was vodka and orange juice pre-mixed in a bottle, and it was horrible. But yeah, I was doing lots of things when I was young that I shouldn't have been doing. I was lighting fires. I had my first cigarette at 8 years old. I was swearing like a champion. So it was just, natural progression, I guess, to, my first drink at 11. And then I had my first drunk at 13. Colt 45 quarts, chugging them down, hanging with the big boys. That was always my goal, is to hang with the fellows. I was a tomboy. I was always with the guys. And I wanted to drink as much as the guys did. I wanted to hang with the big boys. That was always my goal. And I wasn't really good at it until I found other substances. Then I became really good at hanging in there and having that wooden leg that everybody else seemed to have. I graduated to bigger and better things. But from the time I took the first drink, I had chased that for the next 15 years, like it was nobody's business. And I don't know, if I was using it to escape my family, or because I wasn't comfortable in my own skin. But I will tell you, I drank to get drunk from day one. I was not a social drinker. I was a blackout drinker from the beginning. I smashed every car that I owned until I got sober. And I always drove drunk. And it's really amazing that I haven't gotten a DUI. That's a yet for me. I have a lot of yets because I came in here young. And I was 27 when I got here, so I have a lot of yets. And a lot of things weren't even, like, out there then when I came in. So, So I quit my senior year because I needed money to drink and to drug, and I really just wanted to work. I just wanted money, and I wanted to drink. I had no goals. I had no direction. I was with abusive boyfriends. I saw my mother get the shit kicked out of her, so I thought that was normal. And so, of course, my picker was already broken, before I even got out of the gate. My life was chaotic. It was unmanageable, but I was already used to that in my household, so that felt normal to me. So I bounced from job to job, working like an animal. And then I finally got a job at the post office after 3.5 years. I took the test. I was high as a kite when I took the civil service test, and I passed it with a 98. Don't ask me how. I don't even know if I had any brain cells left at that point. I was young, but I was burning them pretty quick. And they called me for a job. And God's timing was perfect because I was losing my other job due to drinking. And so I started working at the post office, and I remember my mother telling me, "Now just go in there and keep your head down and don't tell people your whole life story and don't get in with the wrong crowd." 3 months later, I was right back to where I was at my previous job. So, the people, the places, and the things change, but I didn't. I had went and started making a lot of money at the post office. Back in 84, I was making $9.65 an hour, and that was like hitting the lottery. I didn't have a car. Never thought to get a car because I was spending all my money drinking and drugging. I just worked like an animal. But my life got very unmanageable. And I knew that I wasn't like other people. I saw other people like going home, getting married, having children. And I never wanted to go home. I never wanted to go home. I never wanted the party to end. And I knew that there was something not right with me. So I tried to moderate. I tried to stop. And for 2 years, I tried everything like it says in the book there. in chapter 3. I did everything but drinking the milk with the whiskey, you know. I wasn't really a brown liquor person. Every time I drank the brown liquor, bad things happened to me. Bad things happened. And bad things that I don't remember, and I hope I never do remember them. I stayed away from the brown liquor. So I tried all the different equations, and I could not stop on my own willpower. And that really, that scared me, I think, although I wouldn't cop to it at that point. But it scared me because I thought I was a pretty strong-willed person and that, you know, I could stop. I was young. I was strong. I was unloading trucks at the post office. Like, I got this. I should be able to do this. And I couldn't. And so I got scared, but immediately I just stuffed that. And I was like, well, you know what? I'll be dead before I'm 30, so no biggie. You know, I'm out here busting my ass, and I'm just going to go out with a bang. And I resigned myself to that fact. But God had other plans, you know. I grew up in a Catholic household. God was an obligation. I had a very religious grandmother, but I just went to church so I could go to the bakery afterwards. That was the extent of my religious education. I didn't want to be inside. I didn't want to go to church. I didn't want to do any of those things when I was a kid, and I didn't have to because I was unsupervised. So God had other plans for me, and I was going to lose my job because they had busted a drug dealer, loan shark, bookie, and they came looking for me because I was in his black book. And so I volunteered to go to treatment because I had bought a condo with my mother, thinking if I had some financial responsibility that I would stop drinking. Yeah, no. I had to get a second job so that I could pay off my bar tab, my drug dealer, my bills. Still no car. Yeah, unmanageability at its finest. So I went to treatment for 30 days. And I went to an all-women rehab. Oh my gosh. I was more afraid of the women than I was of putting down the drink. Because at this point, I was really sick and tired and I needed a break from two jobs, you know, being up for like days on end and hungover and just trying to function physically. So I was looking forward to this little rest in the hotel. I went there and I was pretty defiant when I got there and belligerent. I was an obnoxious drunk. I was the in-your-face, spitting at you when I talked to you. So the first 2 weeks I was like, you know, all closed up like a clam. And they're trying to teach me that I have a disease. For somebody that thought she knew everything, you know, I didn't know nothing. I didn't know nothing about a disease. All I knew how to do was work like an animal and drink like a fish and drug. That was it. And they tried to teach me, you know, about the progression and you know, if you just have one, you're going to go back to this. And I didn't believe a word that they said. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to lay low here, you know, for 30 days, and then when I get out, I'm going to lay low at my job and, you know, get them off my back, and then I'm just going to smoke pot. So, because the other two things were what was killing me, right? So anyway, it was funny, and I just shared this story with a newcomer before the meeting, and I didn't know what a reservation was. I didn't know lurking notions, reservations, excuses. I didn't know what that was. You know, I was so naive. And this girl came in-house on a Saturday night, because we went out every night to a meeting in the buggy. And she came in to share her story. And she said that she had, you know, 3 years sober. And she went to a 4th of July picnic, and they were passing around a joint. She took a toke and she was off for like a 2-year run. And I was like, 2-year run? 2-year run doing what? You know, and then it all came together for me about the progression. And now I'm like, oh God, I gotta quit everything now? Like I can't do anything when I get out of here? And that was a hard pill to swallow for a 27-year-old, that I can't do anything. And so now I'm scared to leave. I'm like, I can't leave this place. I want to stay here forever because I'm afraid to go out there because I know that I can't stay sober. I tried this for 2 years. I can't do it by myself. And so, I don't know, before I left, you know, I went to church a couple of times and I don't know, I think instinctively, like I knew that maybe God was my only hope, but like God didn't want nothing to do with me. I was, you know, I was a piece of crap. I was irredeemable. And so I went to this church, this Catholic church, St. John's in Middletown, Connecticut. And I remember putting my hand on the big oak door and looking up, waiting, you know, for the lightning bolt, because that's what they told me. I'm going to be struck dead. And it didn't happen. I was surprised, you know, because they drilled that stuff in your brain. Repetition, it works, you know? So anyway, I go in there and I hit my knees and I say to God, you know, I'm leaving, I'm scared to death, and I'm not going to make it. My life is in shambles and I can't fix it. And I asked God to help me. And, you know, I didn't go through the proper channels. I didn't, you know, do the checklist or whatever you're supposed to do. And God met me there where I was at. And I had a spiritual experience before I left. And I'm just so grateful that God did that. Because I don't think I'd be here today if I didn't pray that prayer. Because it was honest. You know, step one was honest. And I had run out of plans and schemes. And I was, you know, I was desperate. I was at the bottom. And I'm so grateful. And so I left there. And they told me, you know, go to a meeting every day. Get a temporary sponsor. And get phone numbers. Okay. So I'm scared to death now. So I go out. I do what they tell me. Which that's a miracle in and of itself. Going to a meeting when I get out. Knees knocking, sweating bullets, scared to death, heart pounding out of my chest. It's nice when you're in the van going with a group of people. But when you got to walk up to a meeting by yourself, that's a whole other ballgame. And, you know, I'm just an anxious little kid, you know, fearful, afraid of everything. And now I have no buffer. I have nothing, no crutch. So I walk in, they welcome me. And, you know, you don't really know what you've missed your whole life because you've never had it. But when I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous, I knew that I was home. I knew I belonged here. I knew you guys were my family. And I knew I was safe. I wasn't safe at home with my family, but I knew I was safe here with you guys. And a sponsor was given to me. I didn't get to pick and choose and decide and look. Back then it was a little different. It was a little more harsh. They didn't give a shit about your feelings. And thank God, because I'd be dead if they coddled me. So, and I was used to violence and sarcasm, so it worked out well for me. And so I got a sponsor. I was given a sponsor. And I went to a lot of meetings for my first 2 years. I went to 9 meetings a week. And I did a 90 and 90. I know it's not in the book, but the sponsor requested it. I already had 30 days, and I'm out. And I'm like, yeah, work the step. Nope. We're not looking at any steps. You're going to call me every day. You're going to go to a meeting. You're going to get a commitment. You're going to pray in the morning and pray at night. You're going to write a gratitude list. And you're going to get other women's phone numbers, and you're going to call them. Okay. So my recovery is like not a straight line. It's a zigzag. There's a lot of things that I didn't do right. What I did do is not pick up a drink or drug no matter what. And no relationships for the first year. I did that too. Did that. So at 120 days, unbeknownst to me, I'm building a foundation. Okay. You know, steps 1, 2, and 3, I'm working them and I don't even know it. But, you know, no opening of the book, none of that. God bless the people. Two months, boom, fast track, sponsoring people. That's fantastic. That was not my experience. And what I've learned is that there is no right or wrong way here. God, thank God for this. Thank God there's no right or wrong way to go through the book, to go through the steps. There was a guy in my EAP at the post office. He did a step a year. What is that? So you get through all 12 steps in 12 years, but you know what? South Carolina, he's 41 years sober, beat throat cancer, still sober. God bless him. Who am I to judge how people do it? You know, whatever works. But I've come to believe that God is in control of my sobriety. God reveals to me what needs to be revealed at the time it needs to be revealed, and not a minute sooner. That's just been my experience throughout the years. So it took me a good 3.5, almost 4 years before I even finished my fifth step. Because I got sidetracked. 1.5 years, I'm on the prowl, I want a relationship, I want a boyfriend. I want to be somebody's girlfriend. And I met the boy on the AA campus, like it says in the book, just got out of prison 3 months earlier. Yeah, I was in love. We're getting married. And I got pregnant 3 months later. And then he relapsed. And then he lost his job. And now I'm supporting him. I'm like, really? Like, this what sobriety is? Yeah. Okay. So anyway, I had my daughter, Natalie, and she was born with cerebral palsy and mental retardation. I don't know how. I was clean and sober. I had sponsees that were smoking crack throughout all their pregnancies, and they had healthy children. But you know what? This is what I got. This is what God gave me. And when it happened, I don't even know if I allowed myself to be pissed. Because first of all, this tomboy should have never had a baby. Just saying. I didn't even think I could get pregnant. But here I am with a baby. Don't know how to feed her. Don't know how to change her diaper. So now I start calling the women in the program that I didn't call for the first 2 years of my sobriety. Because I'm desperate now. These women are going to show me how to change a diaper for the love of God. So, oh yeah, God, I knew nothing. I knew nothing about life. Anyway, I was such a spoiled, selfish, self-centered brat that having my daughter was the only way for me to get out of myself. And God knew exactly what he was doing. And I don't even know if I'd still be sober if I didn't have her. Because nobody wanted to take care of Natalie. Nobody wanted to take her overnight. Nobody wanted to watch her. She was brutal. So she came everywhere with me. And so I had to stick around. Even if I didn't feel like it. is who's going to take care of her? So anyway, it took me 3 years to kick her father to the curb, ball and chain. Thank God he gave up his parental rights because he didn't want to pay the $50 a week child support. Yeah, he was a winner. Stick with the winners, they say. Well, I didn't in the beginning. So, but I completed the steps. I had to file bankruptcy. I had to get outside help because I had so much resentment and rage that I had stuffed for like the first 5 years of my sobriety that I was going to kill my own kid, stone cold sober. And I was clinically depressed, but I wouldn't cop to it, and I wouldn't take any medication. So, I took the actions. I took the suggestions. People were like, you know, you gotta keep trudging. And while I was sitting there crying every night, I heard God as I was sitting in the bathtub. My first audible from God. I haven't had many. I've had like three. And God said, you need professional help. And I looked around because I know I'm not saying it because that's the last thing I want to do. You know, my mom was in a psych ward for pills. Like, I do not want to be my mother. Okay? So, anyway, I went for 3 years. It was the best thing I could have ever done. You know, when I came into sobriety, I forgave my parents because they were incapable of loving me and protecting me and taking care of me because they were in their own alcoholism. But I only forgave them up here, intellectually. You know, I didn't know about this 18-inch highway that they talk about. And so, after I did the therapy, though, then I understood that, you know, I got to let go of this resentment because, like it says in 66, boy, number one offender that's going to take me out. I'm going to go to prison and I'm going to die if I hold on to resentments. There's no doubt about that. So I forgave them in my heart. And then I started to build a relationship after I forgave them. And boy, what a gift that was. Both of my parents just died within the last 3 years. And man, I will tell you, my dad was a fireman. I used to go down to the firehouse and I would make such a scene and embarrass him. I was such a horrible daughter. God, I was so horrible. And my dad, when I got sober, I had a tab at one of the pharmacies. And I went in to pay it. You know, it's part of my ninth step amends. And the pharmacist said, oh yeah, you know, you don't have a tab. I said, no, I know. I owe $300. I know what I owe. I always knew what I owed, you know? And he's like, well, he says, your dad came in and paid it. And I was like, what? Like, after all the stuff I put my dad through, like, and at that moment, I understood what grace was because I certainly didn't deserve it. I did not deserve what I was getting. And so I got to build a relationship with both of my parents before they passed. And what a gift, so many gifts of the program. And after my mom died, you know, I was always, because I'm still so selfish and self-centered. It's all about me still. You know, that doesn't go away, really. I mean, it does, you subdue it, but it's there. And I'm always thinking about the gifts that I get from the program, right? Because it's all about me. And then God revealed to me, you know what? Like, your mom got a gift. Your mom didn't have to bury you. She didn't have to bury a daughter because I was well on my way out. because this is life or death for me. So, lots of gifts, lots of gifts. It took a village for me to get and stay sober. It took a village for me to raise my daughter. I take no credit that she's still alive and she's going to be 33 on the 4th of July. She was born on the 4th of July, came in with a bang. Yeah, God has a sense of humor. So, but at 10 years sober, though, I went dry. I met my husband, white picket fence, get married. I'm doing one meeting a week because I'm afraid he's going to find out who I really am. He's going to hit the road. So I got to stay home and manipulate this shit and keep him here, right? We're going to be married like 24 years in October. Like, it's amazing that I even got married because that wasn't on my list either. No marriage, no kid. But here we are. No sobriety either. But anyway, so a newcomer called me. Thank God for the newcomers. I cannot stress enough how important working with other alcoholics are. It's vital. Vital, like it says in the book. And so they called me and they wanted me to take them to a meeting. And I'm only going to one meeting a week. So that was me getting back in to AA, was taking her and bringing her. And God just continued to put angels in my life. Every time I got off the beam, I went dry, whatever I was doing. So at 15 years sober, I moved down here. 2 years here, no sponsor, checking the boxes. I'm sponsoring people, I'm doing church, I'm working, you know, 6 days a week, 10 hours a day at the post office, check, 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 I got this, whatever. And no eyeball to eyeball sponsor. I don't recommend that. Again, I can't be left unsupervised. I need an eyeball to eyeball sponsor. Sponsorship is very important. I need to be accountable. I can't be honest by myself. I need all of you, and then I need one person who knows all my crazy. So of course, and you guys didn't do recovery right here at all. God, Florida AA sucked when I got here in 2005. God, it sucked so bad. And then Susie, who spoke here in December at your anniversary meeting, who was my best friend, my sponsor, she came down and she did an inventory with me. It was funny. You ever need a great four-step done? Call Susie in North Carolina. She's your girl. Four-step queen. Anyway. She's like, yeah, this is great. Check, check, check. She says, so I'm going to ask you, well, where's God? I was like, praying, church, meetings. And she's like, yeah, that's great. That's great. That's great. She says, but this whole inventory is all fear-based, so I'm going to ask you again, where's God? At this point, I'm bawling my eyes out. I'm 17 years sober, and I don't know what the F I'm doing. I'm clueless. I don't know where God is. I'm doing all these things, but God's nowhere to be found. God has left the building. I am self-will run riot. I'm running on fear, self-will, self-reliance, self-confidence, self. That was a big eye-opener for me, big eye-opener. So I got a sponsor here. And then at 20 years sober, I fired that sponsor and I got the sponsor I have now. And at 20 years, I started my emotional sobriety journey of actually practicing these principles and being a demonstration and living this program. It's a design for living, not to get sober. And I don't know what I was doing the first 20 years. I was doing something, but I wasn't really living. So today, I'm active in my home group. And I sponsor others. And really, it is the bright spot of my life, these newcomers. Oh my gosh, brings it right back. You know, I got that built-in forgetter. I have goals today. And my goal is to die sober. My goal is to get to the gym and start lifting weights. I made that goal 2 years ago when I hit 60. I still haven't made it. So I guess I still have, you know, sloth. Sloth is still alive and well. These defects are there. So, but each day, like, I want more God, less Leslie, more love in my life. You know, because I'm really good at fear. But, you know, I'm not really good at love. But you guys here in Alcoholics Anonymous, over the last 35 years, have loved me back to health. You've loved me. You've helped me heal. You haven't judged me. You haven't thrown me out. And you guys have been there for me. So I just want to keep doing the next right thing and passing that love that you guys gave me on to the next person for free and for fun. Because that's what it's about. You know? That primary purpose is still sick and suffering. And sometimes that's not the newcomer. Sometimes it's an old timer. So, you know, I have to be aware. I have to constantly think of others, get out of myself, get out of my crazy. And remember that, you know, you guys can have a meeting without me, but I can't have one without you. So I'm grateful you guys had me here. Thanks.